Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today it's bird news with Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
So you know spring is not far away when the woodcocks start their display, but is February a little bit early for that?
No, it's not early for them. Spring does feel pretty far away right now. And these birds that come back this early are sort of funny that it's a pretty risky proposition. But every year, at some point in February, late February would be typical for the first woodcocks to start displaying. And the reality is with woodcocks that a few enterprising, probably males, overwinter and can sometimes find them displaying just in the middle of winter, December, January, you know, whenever in certain places. They're still pretty rare, but they're just... they're one of these species that doesn't go very far, and a few of them stay close by. And I guess from their perspective, the potential benefit is being the first to get a really good displaying territory. If you're a male, if you're already here, then you've won because you have your pick of the best territories. But there are risks. I mean, if we're getting more of this kind of snow, then it's going to be harder for them to find food. So,
yeah, and for folks who haven't seen that display, describe what that looks like.
Woodcock display. The mainstay of every nature center is, you know, woodcock walks in early spring. And it's just really comical. So the male already is sort of inherently comical. He's just this plump, strange-looking bird with a long bill who just sits in the middle of a field and goes, meh, meh. The beautiful song of the male woodcock, but then it gets interesting because he launches himself into the air, and his wings are making all kinds of twittering sounds as he spirals his way upwards, higher, 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 tweet, 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 and he gets up to a certain point, and then he starts falling back to earth, kind of like back and forth, like a leaf dropping from a tree in the fall, and he's chirping the whole time. And I've lost track of the lead. I think that is actually a vocal sound. At one point, it wasn't clear if it was made by the wind moving over the feathers. But anyway, then it drops back down to earth. Tweet, 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 tweet. And then it's silent for a second. And then he starts painting again and starts the whole process. And it's all for the other males and it's for the females. And it's to show that he's there, he's got a little patch of ground, and he's ready to mate. Even if it's February and there are no females around yet, you know, he's like, whatever, I'm here, I'm ready.
So the females wait until the weather's a little nicer.
I would think so. I'm sort of assuming that just based on the way males and females, you know, highly territorial species, the males tend to be strongly motivated to come back a little bit earlier.
And they do that display, what, until about May?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. They'll do it sporadically after that. But yeah, you can expect it reliably from, you know, March, April, May.
That sounds good. All right. 866-999-4626 is our number for your bird comments, questions, or stories this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we have another early migrant is what, killdeer?
We do. Just one last thing on woodcocks.
Sure.
They're not, just people should realize how common they are, and just to tune your ears for that painting sound, because I typically get my first one of the year while I'm, you know, heading back to my car at a supermarket parking lot or something like that. They're, you know, they don't need huge wild areas. They're here and there. And so if you're tuned to that sound, you'll start to realize that woodcocks are all over the place. The stop and shops that I go to, Harwich and Orleans, I've heard woodcocks just while standing in the parking lot.
And it's pretty much like dusk and dawn, right, when they do this?
Yes. Yeah, good point. Yeah. It's twilight, and they'll do it during the night, but dusk and dawn are the best times.
All right, tell us about the killdeer.
Yeah, killdeer. I saw a couple of reports probably 2 weeks ago of overly exuberant killdeer that have come back. And you can occasionally find a killdeer in the winter. They might, you know, if it's not too snowy, they'll hang out in a field. So killdeer is a big kind of atypical plover. You think of plovers as like piping plovers and the other plovers that are at the beach. But killdeer are really a grassland type bird. And so if you're familiar with them, you know that killdeer nest at places like athletic fields around high schools and gravel pits and funny places like that. But they will hang out at beaches and they will take advantage of mud flats and things, especially if things get icy and that's the only place where there's food. And so when a few come back early, it might be closer to a beach. But the most I've ever seen have been at grassy airports like the Chatham Airport. I've seen numbers of killdeer. They're not a super common Cape Cod bird, but they're just one of those really early migrants that you're sort of shaking your head when you look out the window at the weather. Like, why are you here? but I'm glad they do. They give us hope.
Kate sent an email. She says, we put out a hummingbird feeder for the first time last year and really enjoyed our visitors. I'm wondering when we should put the feeder out in the spring.
Put it out right now. There's actually a hummingbird overwintering at an undisclosed location. And this happens sometimes where we get these rare hummingbirds from out west that show up in typically like November. November is usually when we become aware of them, November, December. It's a very strange phenomenon, but it's a very regular phenomenon. Every year, somewhere on the Cape, I guarantee you, there's a hummingbird from out west, typically a rufous hummingbird. You should look those up. It's an adult male. It's a beautiful, like, brassy, orangey, very different than our ruby-throated hummingbird. But they can survive if somebody is willing to keep unfrozen nectar out in a feeder.
That's what I was going to say. How do you keep it from freezing?
There's different techniques, and you can wrap lights around it, or you could just keep on it, and you keep an unfrozen one in the house, and you switch them out every so often. But it's been done before, and they can overwinter here successfully. Which for them means until late February or early March or something like that. And I think people assume that if you've got a hummingbird and it disappears in late February, that it didn't make it. But that's actually when they would start heading north from their wintering grounds in western Mexico. We're a long way from western Mexico here, but they're just tougher. And I've said this many times before. They're tougher than people realize. Rufous hummingbirds in particular are breeding in pretty cold places that don't have a lot of flowers in the spring when they come back. And so they can survive fairly cold temperatures as long as they have food. It's like with any other bird. As long as they have food and they can stoke their metabolism and keep their body temperature up, they can survive a lot of things that would surprise us. But that wasn't the question. The question was when. And so April, the very first ones, usually mid-April, is when the first couple of ruby-throated hummingbirds, our local breeding hummingbird, that's when the first reports come in here on the Cape. But putting up your feeder in mid-April is not it's more just in case than, yes, I'm going to have hummingbirds in mid-April.
Right.
May 1st is by May 1st you have a pretty good chance of getting them, but you know, and it goes up from there. By the second week in May you're really high, but mid-April you might get one of the early ones. They're definitely moving then, and so that's a good. And it's still cold then. You don't have to change. It's not like it's July and you have to change it out every couple of days because it's getting moldy. You can just kind of hang it and forget it because it's still cold.
And you might get some Baltimore Orioles too, right? I've had that at my hummingbird feeders early.
Oh yeah, that's true. they're overwintering right now. It's a ridiculous number of Baltimore Orioles on the Cape this winter. We talked about that last month, but I'm still getting reports. Somebody I know had three at their feeders in Eastham until pretty recently. They're down to one, but Wow. I don't know what's up with all these orioles, but yeah, they are on a similar schedule to the hummingbirds. You might get one the last half of April, but by May 1st, chances skyrocket of getting an oriole. Get your orange out there, and yes, they will sometimes visit a hummingbird.
Your grape here. Jelly, yeah.
Your grape jelly, yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. You mentioned, we talked about the killdeer, but we are seeing some more out-of-season plovers, right? The ones that do live at the beach.
Yes. And there have been a couple this winter that are sort of strange. You know, when it shows up in January, you're wondering, is this early or late? And I'm sure they're late. And you just get these birds that don't migrate, or, you know, maybe something's wrong with them, or they're just, for whatever reason. And that's, as I talk about a lot, that's what makes the Christmas bird counts interesting, is, you know, what birds didn't migrate that are out there somewhere waiting to be found. Like somebody in Woods Hole has a oven bird just showed up in their yard. And this is a warbler that shouldn't be here and shouldn't show up here until May. And should be gone, should be leaving in September, August and September. But and then, you know, wintering in the tropics. But for some reason, every once in a while, an oven bird or two will try to overwinter on the Cape and just sift around in the leaf litter, and there's enough food in the leaf litter for them to survive. But why that individual did it is anyone's guess, but they're out there. And the same is true of this piping plover. I think it's in Chatham. This is one that came in on Facebook. I'm not sure they said which beach it was. They just said Chatham. There was another one at Calmus and Hyannis about a month ago. And so, in part, you know, the population is a lot higher than it was 30 years ago. So there's just more of them out there that are available to do weird things like, try to stay through the winter. I don't know how much of it has to do with climate change as well. There's, you know, but it does seem to happen more often now.
No, and we don't really know why some will stay instead of leaving. But food might be the motivator, right? It could be like it's a little bit warmer, because it isn't just the temperature that gets the birds to migrate, right? It's like the change of light and all of that.
Right. It depends on the species, but yes, day length is a big it's a big factor for a lot of species for things like their hormones. Singing behavior, migratory behavior, nesting behavior. And we can see that happening right now. And a lot of people have probably noticed that birds are singing more. And it's striking because it clearly has nothing to do with the weather. You go outside, you know, there were those 18-degree days, and you know, which feels really cool because it doesn't usually get that cold around here.
Yeah.
And you go outside and the cardinals are like, you know, singing away, and
they're saying beautiful day,
and they weren't 2 weeks earlier when it was warm. You know, so it's clearly not temperature. It's just a good illustration of the effect of day length on bird behavior. But it's anyone's guess, like I said, why these outlier birds don't migrate. If you see them somewhere and they're surviving, there's obviously some food there. They wouldn't still be there and breathing if there wasn't food, yeah, so it could be some local food resource was enough to just convince them to hang out for whatever reason. Something went wrong with their molt, or they just like weren't physiologically ready for some reason at some critical migratory window, and there was some food there, so they ended up staying, and there they are. And it gets to a certain point, and
miss their window,
telling them to migrate anymore. Yes. Right, you know,
yeah.
How it is when you get your window.
Let's talk to Jean, who's giving us a call from West Dennis. Hi, Jean.
Oh, hi. I had a Western tanager coming to my yard all fall until about 2 weeks ago, and it was coming every single day. And I'm just worried that maybe it died in the cold. I mean, I know you don't know, but I was just wondering if you think the chances of it dying, because it was really a regular customer in my yard.
Right. And that was the other big story, the big kind of strange story this winter was Western tanagers. And you weren't alone. A bunch of people had Western tanagers. In a normal winter, there are none. It's a very rare bird, and it's certainly not a feeder bird like, oh, I got my Western tanager. But there were several. There were in Brewster and Dennis and Yarmouth and one on the Vineyard and Orleans. I mean, it was just crazy. And so you're right. I don't know. But that's too early. I would think that's too early for it to think it's time to move on if it still has that steady food source. But, there's no way to know. It is suspicious that it and other ones did the same, like the one in Brewster had better food available to it than most humans do. I mean, these people had a really nice feeder array with, there was fruit. They had, native shrubs in the yard that still had fruit on them. It was really a nice spot. And it stopped coming for whatever reason, and so either they moved on or they passed on.
Gene, I'd like to think that it just found another yard with feeders, and maybe it said, "Oh, you know what? I think I'm going to hang out here for a while."
Yeah,
I know. I would like to too, and I would like to think that it would come back, but it did look a little bit scruffy, like not majorly, but its feathers were just a little bit scruffy. So it may not have been 100% healthy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know nobody knows.
They winter in pretty warm places in I think mostly the Pacific slope of Mexico and Central America. So they nest in the Rocky Mountains. They're not they can handle some cold, but it just could be that it just couldn't handle it. But this is you can believe whatever you want. There's no reason to be a Debbie Downer.
Yeah,
right.
Come up with whatever story you want to tell this bird, because we don't
know. That's what you can think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll just keep your eye out, Gene. You never know. Maybe it'll come back. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
I will. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Gene. Sure. Tom is giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, it was out around noon Saturday near the Bike Rotary in Harwich, and happened to look up and saw a bald eagle right around treetop level. It was getting chased by a crow, which just looked tiny next to it. But I'm wondering if anybody out there listening also saw it around noon on Saturday.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, a crow will look like a hummingbird next to an eagle. It's always funny to see. Eagles are increasing so much, which is awesome. It's a bird everybody can get behind, and I get more and more
winter over here.
And that's always the winter has always been the time when you could see bald eagles, and the other time
around
on the Cape
Pond
that is
quite frequent.
What's that?
Yeah, around Hinckley's Pond, they're quite frequent.
Absolutely, yeah. The long pond, basically those Harwich Brewster big ponds, has always been a consistent place where you can get them in the winter, and winter was always the time when there were the most bald eagles in Massachusetts and on the Cape. And the other time you could get them weirdly was around June, when you would get immature birds that had come north from who knows where, Florida. You know, they fledge from a nest down there and just start wandering north, and you'd see them like sitting on the beach at Grace Point or something like that. But now, I mean, things are much different now than they were 20 years ago, because they're actually nesting here on the Cape now. And there's no month of the year where there are not bald eagles on Cape Cod pretty consistently. And so this is the time of year when a local nesting pair would be nesting.
Tom, thanks for the call. I've seen some Facebook postings of eagles here in Falmouth, some people spotting some in Falmouth.
I don't remember
exactly where it was
places, but... and somebody posted a video of, it was a little distant, I'm pretty sure it was an eagle, like a young eagle, sitting on what some of the locals were saying was an osprey nest and eating something. And the person was wondering if, that was an eagle nest. But you wouldn't see an immature immature eagles don't nest, and it wouldn't, the behavior wasn't right for what would be happening at a nest right now. It was just, having some lunch,
taking a snack.
Apparently was an old, was an osprey nest. And this is a thing, as the eagles increase, they see an osprey nest and they're like, hey, you know, but nobody's home. So they you get these squatters, and it's happened a couple times where, you know, what happens when the ospreys come back? And it happened with the one on the vineyard. The one on the vineyard was big news. And then apparently it failed because when the ospreys came back and they were sparring, the eagles ended up breaking their own eggs in the process of fighting off the ospreys. So, and this has happened in Lakeville as well, which the big ponds in Lakeville, there are multiple pairs of bald eagles breeding there. And according to the state biologist, this has happened there where, and ospreys can drive off bald eagles when they get back, surprisingly. Bald eagles tend to win the fights over food, but ospreys are pretty strongly motivated to take their nest back and get pretty ferocious about it.
We're talking with Mark Faraday. It's Bird News, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk about ospreys after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Alan on the vineyard says he has a friend who saw an eagle near Oyster Pond on the vineyard, but what he really wants to know is what's the best kind of feed to attract unusual birds?
Well, if you want to attract bald eagles, I would try dead fish. just put them out there on a platform and, you know, see what happens. oftentimes the rare bird, it's hard to say one in particular, but it is true that the expensive stuff does seem to attract rare birds, like especially these rare tanagers. For some reason, when western tanagers and summer tanagers show up, it's often at somebody's house where they're feeding the expensive hulled sunflower seeds, so out of the shell, you know, just the white hearts of the sunflower seeds. And obviously it's more expensive because you're not paying for the hull, which is just mulch, basically. It just sort of molds under your feeders. And so it's less mess, and it's less work for the birds, and they seem to appreciate that. Some of these, like the people who've been talking about their orioles that they have, some of them have settled in on peanuts with, I mean, good Lord. I mean, that's why I say some of these birds are eating better than the people. You know, people do put out peanuts, and you can get them that are specifically for birds. Suet's an important one to have. I mean, there are a variety of things, especially the warblers, any kind of interesting warbler. So, like, one of the biggest rarities this winter was the Townsend's warbler that I guess is gone, unless people are just not looking for it anymore. It was at the park, along the canal in Bourne. But it was actually in someone's yard eating suet. And suet will attract all kinds of warblers that would not come to your seed. I mean, the standard one is pine warblers, and pine warblers are increasingly normal thing to see at your suet feeder in the winter. I certainly get them every year. But then there are some other ones. I mean, yellow-rumped warblers as well. But then sometimes you might get an orange-crowned warbler, which is not familiar to most people, when you would probably be a little bit puzzled by or have to look up. And there's, I know, at least one or two. I think there's probably two visiting suet feeders right now, at least, that we know about somewhere on the Cape. And my bluebirds come to my suet every day. That's an easy one. All I do is black oil sunflower seed, the cheap kind, suet, and I try to keep some water out.
Water's big. Water's important.
Water's probably the most important thing when you get into the cold weather like this. There hasn't been a lot of weather this winter where it's been as critical for them, you know, because they can find it on their own. When it's deep freeze, it gets harder for them, and they definitely appreciate having open water. My heated bird bath broke. I don't know if it's still under warranty. I'll talk to Mike. So I have to go out, like, pour out some fresh water in the morning, you know, if it's really cold. And that's an important one.
Yep. All right, let's talk to Frank, who's giving us a call from Chatham. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Hey, thank you very much. Interesting. Part of my question was answered by the previous caller, but I'm a snowbird myself, and unfortunately this year we're not in Florida due to COVID. And we feed the birds a lot, but what I've started to do is put out large blocks of suet, and as you indicated, attracting a lot of different birds than the seed, specifically woodpeckers and things like that, and bluebirds. But my question really is, should you do suet all year round, or is it a winter feed? What's the story on that? It certainly is a lot easier than the seed.
Yeah. I mean, it's a winter thing. I don't, there's no, nobody's going to come to your house and cite you for putting, the bird feeder police will not come and cite you for putting out suet in the summer. Summer, it's just, you don't really need to put out any kind of seed. No one ever needs to put out bird seed. It's a very, let's face it, it's a very optional thing to do year round. But you certainly don't need to do it as much from the bird's perspective in the summer. You know, bird feeding is for our entertainment, but, you know, as I always say, it's for us. And there's so many insects in the summer, as we know, that they don't need the suet, but they will visit it. They're not going to pass up an easy free meal. I don't know about it going rancid and stuff like that. I don't, they have stronger stomachs than we do in some cases, but, It's up to you. I don't do suet. I barely do any kind of food in the summer. The birds are just sort of around, and my hummingbird feeder out. But I don't worry as much about the other seeds. The birds are well fed by the world around them at that time of year.
All right, Frank. Thanks for the call. Let's talk to Skip calling from Woods Hole. Hi, Skip.
Good morning. So a couple weeks ago, I got up earlier than normal, went out to get my papers, and witnessed the influx of the crows. And for at least 2 or 3 minutes, there were probably 50 to 75 across and kept coming, you know, just this huge flood of them. And I've heard of it before, but I'd never seen it.
Yeah, the commuting crows.
Were you with Tippi Hedren at the time?
Was I what?
Still alive? I don't know.
He was joking.
It was a Hitchcock reference. I mean, it's an interesting phenomenon, and that's how crows are. Crows are very, very communal in the winter. They have they form these big communal roosts, and there are some famous ones around the state where you're talking about tens of thousands of crows, if you can imagine that. You think of how noisy your handful of neighborhood crows are. Try, you know, 15,000 crows going into roosts. Like there's one in Lawrence. They're often in more developed areas where there are lots of lights at night. They seem to like that. Crows are trying to avoid owls, great horned owls specifically. There's really no other owl that's going to be bothering crows very much. But great horned owls famously will target crows at their roosts, and they don't like that. It's one of the reasons they commute to the vineyard at night. And where did you say you were?
Woods Hole.
Woods Hole.
In Woods Hole, right, yeah. I'm staying in a house on Albatross Street, which is down by the harbor, and they flew right over the MBL buildings. And as I say, you know, there were several thousand of them.
And what was time of day and the direction?
I think it was about 10 till 7, and they were going south to north.
7 a.m.?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So that makes sense. I mean, so they were probably coming from the vineyard and heading to the Bourne landfill.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, there was one group of probably 75 that settled on one of the trees over by the MBL dining hall before they took off. Yeah. And I see crows all the time, but I've never witnessed that great influx at one time.
Well, Skip, thanks for sharing. We appreciate that.
They're famous dumpster divers, and if you listen, I'm sure there were fish crows mixed in. And so, typically, fish crows migrate out for the winter, unlike the American crows that are here year round. Fish crows are migratory, and they've always been more of a southern bird, and they've been increased in over the years, like so many southern birds, but they mostly leave the area except for in that area in particular, Upper Cape, where they're in Plymouth. They're like either side of the Bourne landfill for several miles. It's pretty easy to find fish crows in the winter. And they're very very distinctive sound. They have this kind of nasal two-part.
Yep.
The Fran Drescher of crows, as I would say.
All right, Skip, thanks for calling. So, Mark, ospreys will arrive next month, but in February there are always folks who think they see the earliest arrivals, and you've already gotten some reports where they'll see red-tailed hawks visiting a nest, and people will think it's ospreys. That's typical what happens?
Yes, January, too, and so I never know what to make. Every year people say, the ospreys are back. I just saw them, and it's like mid-January. When you're talking about a bird that's wintering in South America, it's not really a thing that they decide to come back 2 months early. There's nothing, they're not aware of what the weather is like here, if it's a mild winter or whatever. They're there until their body tells them it's time to come back. But it's also true that, especially as the population has gone up and up, there are more ospreys around. There are more probably weird young birds that didn't migrate all the way that are maybe not that far away. There have been attempts at overwintering. So I never know what to believe. But my operational theory is always that it was probably a red-tailed hawk or a great blackback gull. Great blackback gull, especially in flight at a distance, looks just like an osprey, because ospreys have that kind of gull wing shape, that kind of crooked shape to their wings in flight. But even just sitting, you just see like a big dark and light bird, big black and white looking bird sitting on top of an osprey pole. People don't process it beyond that. They're like, it's an osprey. And so those are the two theories. Red-tailed hawks also like to sit on the poles. And we got confirmation of this theory. And somebody said, our ospreys were back, and they sent me a video. And it was clearly a pair of red-tailed hawks. But, it's an easy mistake to make. But at this time of year, it's just very, very unlikely that it is an osprey. By St. Patrick's Day, that's when we legitimately start seeing them. But anything, especially like a month or two ahead of that, is very unlikely to be an osprey.
All right. So keep your eyes open for that. So we've got about a month before we'll actually see some ospreys. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News This Morning with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number for your bird comments, questions, or stories, or we'll talk about other critters as well. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Greg is giving us a call from Woods Hole. Hi, Greg.
Hello. How's everybody?
Great.
Good.
That's good. I'm calling about cardinals.
Okay.
We've been living in our house down Woods Hole Road for about 45 years and been feeding birds. And, occasionally, mostly every year we'll get two males, say, because they're easier to see. And suddenly this year we've been really lucky, I guess. We've had like 8 male cardinals at a time, and we don't have a lot of feeders. We just got two, regular size tube feeders. And so I'm wondering, I never knew that they were birds that flock together, as it were. So what do we know? What could you share, please?
Well, they are of a feather, and they do flock together, and it varies. Like at where I work, Mass Audubon's Wolf Leap Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, it's a wildlife sanctuary, and it's pretty good habitat for birds. And so that's one of the places where a dozen cardinals kind of hanging out together near the feeders would not be unusual. In my house, they seem to be a little more dispersed in my neighborhood. I really only see two at a time. And so it depends on the habitat, but it seems pretty clear that, and they don't migrate. That's the important kind of baseline information, is that cardinals are they're resident birds, like a lot of our feeder birds that we depend on in the winter are downy woodpeckers, and you know, all our woodpeckers and our titmice and chickadees and all that. They're more or less resident. And so it's probably like multiple family groups from a neighborhood kind of getting together around a common resource. But yeah, you're one of the lucky ones. Eight male cardinals. That's a lot of red coming at your eyeballs there. Especially
against the white snow. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not. It's such a classic scene. Ooh, I got a downy woodpecker kind of checking out one of my bluebird boxes. Somebody needs to use it. Please nest there. It's a little early. They're just kind of, you know, looking at the real estate pages.
Checking it out.
Yeah, so enjoy those cardinals. They do. They will flock up if it was a good breeding year in the neighborhood and there's some good winter resources, that you will see them in groups.
Yeah, Greg, enjoy. Thanks for the call. Phil writes, do we normally have pine warblers in Falmouth in the winter, or is this an unusual year for them, or are they vireos?
They're pine warblers, yeah. I was talking about this a little bit earlier, and they are increasingly wintering locally. I've seen that change really just over the last 20 years, where it used to be unusual to see, you know, more than 10 over the course of a day on a Christmas bird count. And now in certain areas, it's not at all. And I had nine together at my suet feeder a couple of weeks ago. They're just one day. I don't know where this was, some roving flock that just came through my neighborhood one day with some different bluebirds than my usual bluebirds and then moved on. So nine pine warblers at my suet one day, to give you an idea of what's out there. And they're, you know, they're in that class of warblers, which is a group of insectivorous songbirds that overwhelmingly migrate out of, especially northern North America, and largely into the subtropics and tropics for the winter. But there are a couple of hardy ones, yellow-rumped warbler, pine warbler, that will try to overwinter and seem to do it very successfully. And they can take advantage of things like suet at bird feeders, and they don't seem to need it. I mean, I don't see my neighborhood pine warbler every day at my suet the way the bluebirds are here every day. And so, you know, he's able to find food out there. They can eat pine nuts, you know, pine seeds to some degree. I know they do eat those. And so, they're able to winter locally. And you should, if you have suet out, yeah, don't be surprised. Just keep an eye out. And you have to kind of train your eyes, because oftentimes they're very subtle. You think of a male pine warbler as a bright yellow bird, but most pine warblers that you will see are some degree of like bland, off-white, grayish, with kind of hints of yellow.
Yeah,
those are the immatures and females. But right. If you know their proportions and what their bill, they have a pretty heavy bill for a warbler. But okay, we're talking about suet. My suet's very popular right now. My Carolina wrens are on it. Woodpeckers, flickers are on it every day. Robin is on it.
Yeah, look at you.
Very popular today.
All right, let's talk to Carol calling from Falmouth. Hi, Carol.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yep. Okay, great. You just answered a lot of my questions, actually. I just the other day went to fix a suet cage that the squirrels had knocked off, and I turned around and I had at least four bluebirds all around another one, and a bird that I didn't recognize, and he had sort of a greenish light greenish hue in the feathers, and I was unsure what it was. And they all just stayed there. They didn't move. They didn't. I kind of stand around the birds, and they don't move. They just kind of continue to feed. And it was my first time having bluebirds as well, so I was very excited. And I had at least four that I can, the bright blue with the russet colored chest, and it was just fascinating. But then there was this one bird that stood out, and the funny thing too was the suet, the bluebird and a downy woodpecker, I think, were sharing, which was kind of neat to see as well.
Yeah.
So I think, I think you answered some of my questions. I think it might have been a walrus.
Well, thanks for sharing what you're seeing.
I'd like to get back to that one that you describe as greenish, because that that could be a number of interesting things. If it was on the suet, it's maybe not what I was thinking of. Usually when someone reports, oh, I have this funny green bird, it's usually at a seed feeder, and it turns out to be a female painted bunting, a female or young male painted bunting. And there were a good number of those earlier in the season. They're mostly gone. I don't know if anybody has one coming to their feeders anymore. But, green usually sets off alarm bells when you say that to a birder in winter. But it could be, like greenish yellow, like maybe it is an orange ground warbler, or maybe it's just a pine warbler. But I would love to see a photo, if you can get even a crappy photo with a phone, is often enough for me to figure out what it is.
Yeah,
that would be great.
So Carol, see if you can do that and send us a photo. We'll see if we can identify it for you. We got a note from Joe in Wacoit who says, listeners might be interested in knowing that Cape Cod is home to a lot of river otters. Now that many ponds have ice in them, is it a good time to look for them on the ice? The one he sent a picture is eating a fish in Dennis with a hungry great blue heron looking for a steal.
Oh, I love otters. One of my two flickers just fought off some starlings that are now coming to my suet, which is not great. I'm sure everybody just is dying to hear what's happening at my bird feeders. We'll just do that from now on. That'll be the show.
Play by play of your feeders. Yeah, river otters. Yeah, there's plenty of them around.
Good radio. I love river. Boy, who doesn't love river otters? I go years between seeing them. It's what I always say about them. They're not uncommon. They're everywhere. They're in every part of the Cape. I see their tracks running through the dunes out in Provincetown as they're kind of moving. They'll move overland. And when it's snowy like this, you can. That's a really fun animal to find their tracks, because they do the belly slide thing. They make some really distinctive tracks, and they have these five-toed. They look like the tracks of a medium-sized dog that has an extra toe. Sort of. Their tracks are very similar to what Fisher tracks look like. So you have to kind of figure out which it is. With belly slides, it's probably going to be an otter. And they just like play their way across through life, really, and across the landscape as they move between water bodies. They'll use salt marshes and salt ponds and regular ponds. And they seem to have these kind of circuits where they'll hang out somewhere. Like a typical experience for us with them at Wealthy Bay Sanctuary is you'll see them for a month. And they're very easy to see. They're not afraid of you. They'll just come up and be crunching on crayfish right in front of you, munch, and then go back down. And then I think when the crayfish population is a little bit depleted, they move on and you don't see them again for a year and a half or something like that. But I think some people on the Falmouth Wildlife Facebook group have been having good luck with them and
posting photos.
We still haven't answered the question, but yes, when there's like small patches of open water, that's a good opportunity to see a lot of things. Ducks, eagles feeding on ducks, otters. It concentrates everything, as all of these things need open water, and so it's good for us and for wildlife photographers in a way, especially if it's close.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Let's talk to Nancy, who's giving us a call from Truro. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there.
Yeah, go ahead, Nancy.
I have a question. I'm just kind of talking about bluebirds. Are they passing through, or are they going to move on, or are they going to stick around? I live in a 300-year-old house part of the year in South Truro, and I'm in the Truro Center the rest of the time. And I tend to see right now there's probably maybe 20 of them in my feeder all the time.
Wow.
And one of the things I wanted to know, besides whether they're going to move on, is will they go to the upside-down feeders, the ones that the nuthatches and the woodpeckers can get to?
That's a good question.
Suet feeders, rather.
First of all, Truro, I love Truro Center. It's not too noisy for you there with all the sound of all the nightclubs and the busy downtown.
Well, actually, South Truro is better. This is a 300-year-old house that was in the family, I think, ancestrally. I'm in my 85th year, and I've always watched birds. And this year, with the COVID around and being housebound, I'm getting a shot today, by the way. And
good for you.
I find that it was really fun to watch the birds here because we have a ton of them over there. There's lots and lots of pine siskins, and there's the rose-belly nuthatches seem to be – rose-breasted nuthatches, I'm sorry, tend to be really more prolific this year. I don't know whether they're sticking around or it's just that every time we drive in to fill up the feeders and the birds from all over Prince Valley Road come flying in and they're like going to like to say, oh, they're here, come out. But then the bluebirds will come. And so I don't know whether they're going to stick around or whether they're going to keep going.
Yeah, so we only have a couple of minutes, about a minute and a half, Mark.
Yeah, so they're it is a good red-breasted nuthatch year. You're right. They actually came in from further north. In addition to the ones that we have locally that nest here and winter here, we had a bunch come in from the north. And south, where you are, is like one of the easiest places to see them. They're just a million of red-breasted nuthatches. Bluebirds are here year-round. It's an open question who is who, winter versus summer, like whether our local breeding birds stay. I think some of them do. And I think some more come into come to the Cape from further north as they get pushed out by heavy snow further north in their breeding range. They do migrate, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, here on the Cape, we basically have the same climate as Maryland in a lot of ways. And so certainly for growing season and that kind of thing. So, you know, they can winter here. So I think we have a combination, but the important thing to remember is that every month of the year is a bluebird month potentially. So you can see them.
Yeah. Nancy, thank you for the phone call. So just in the last 30 seconds or so we have, do they flock more this time of year, or do you see flocks of them any time of year?
They flock more. Everything flocks more in the winter where they're not, you know, territoriality breaks down. They're just coalescing around common resources, and certainly robins, bluebirds, waxwings, you know, blackbirds, all of these things, starlings, they get into big flocks starting in the fall. Not necessarily big flocks. I mean, my local bluebird flock right now that comes to my feeders is three males. But sometimes they get into bigger flocks. And yeah, they're more social. They're moving around the landscape looking for fruit mostly.
Yep.
Things like cedars with a lot of fruits and that kind of thing. Yep.
All right. Mark Faraday joins us the second Tuesday of the month, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. See you next time.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.